Everyone, we'll resume the hearing of submissions on the Southland Water and Land Plan. Grant and Rachel Coburn here. No, okay. How do you pronounce that one here?
Ardoin.
Is Ardoin Farm Dairies here? Sorry if I pronounced that incorrectly.
No, it wasn't too bad.
So good morning and welcome. We read the original submission. Thanks very much for putting that in. You don't need to reread that out to us, but you're very welcome to speak to it and highlight the key points for us.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I've got a few slides to put up on the slideshow here to show, to highlight where we are and what we do. Won't speak to any, I dare say it'll be the odd question you guys will have. Where I come from and what we do is highlighted or identified in our introduction and our submission.
Yep.
And I suppose first thing I will talk about are the physiographic zones. Yep. So we have four physiographic zones, peat wetland, bedrock, hill country, lignite, marine and glade. Just concerns about the boundaries, specific boundaries on those physiographics. Peat wetland, for example, we have on our 320 hectare platform, there's 10 hectares identified as peat wetland. And I think based on, it would be pretty similar in type to the land classification that Patterson submitted on a few weeks ago. So it doesn't really fall in peat wetland at all. So if I go further through here, guys, this is looking down towards Cullet Bay from up on some of the hill. The bottom end of this block that you're looking down towards the sea and on is classified as peat wetland, and I'd be fully in agreement, it is peat wetland. We don't crop on there, so we've made the conscious decision to farm it differently. I agree with physiographics as a tool of identifying risk. But as a regulatory tool, I have major concerns about. So if it was to sit in good management practice, as helping to identify guidelines under good management practice, there'd be considerable value in it. But I know those identifying or those boundaries at home are considerably different to where they actually do really start, okay?
Yeah.
One of the other things I'd like to talk about is the riparian margins, and I think one of our earlier speakers already talked about that. Now, we boundary longwards, and most with 28 k's of waterways. Most of these waterways are reasonably significant as they're coming out of out of dockland. Coming down through the farm. Some of them are already planted, some of them have regenerated in native, but there are still some that need to be under proposed rules, would need to be planted. Considerable cost, and depending on what those margins fall into, could actually have quite a significant effect on what the amount of area that we can actually utilise. So I suppose one of the key things here again is we don't, we've identified that the platform itself we don't winter on to any significant degree, and we're fairly careful around what areas we do winter on. Okay. So a couple of speakers and David Rose spoke on it, and so did Ray, around the fact that we all contribute, and I think that's an acknowledgement that the community needs to start making to a greater or lesser degree. And I'm in support of good management practice and the farm environment plans. I know engagement is probably the greatest challenge that we have out there, is actually getting people engaged in and identifying what their risks are and what their contribution is to water quality. So in that space, I'm part of the Warakina Catchment Group, and we take a fairly active role in that community in trying to enhance that engagement. So I think that's a really, really, what I consider to be a really, really critical part going forward, that A, we have flexibility in behind the rules so that we can actually implement on farm what needs to be implemented to make a difference. And I suppose one of those key points there is around your riparian margins. We're talking flat 3 or 5 metre margins. And I know if you look at the topography we have at home, a lot of our losses are around in critical source areas. So straight riparian margins aren't actually going to cut the mustard for us. So we need to have flexibility so that we can actually identify where our risks are and actually act on those risks. Okay? Mm-hmm. I suppose one of being part of the Porakina Catchment Group, one of the and ES is obviously is quite engaged in that model. It's knowing where what amount of responsibility is allocated to those catchment groups, really, and how that model potentially work going forward. Because keeping in mind that these were all volunteers, trying to capture the best outcomes we possibly can. One of the other key things was the freshwater management units. Guys, I just wondered if, or we considered that they're actually in themselves too large. I know I'm also part of the Orapoki Collie Bay Catchment Group, and Porakina as well. Porakina has considerably, or has different issues to the Aparima. And I can see that if we can split those FMUs up, then we can identify and get better outcomes for those specific areas. Then we will under one or those those huge freshwater management units. Well, that's pretty much. I think pretty much everything else I've got there is reasonably self-explanatory, unless you gentlemen have questions for me.
Yep, I'll see if we do. Just in terms of the freshwater management unit size issue, the staff have already recommended to us some changes to the plan which would enable that FMU process to go down to a catchment or sub-catchment scale if that was sensible in the future. So I think that point's been acknowledged.
Yep.
Okay. Let's see if we have any further questions for either board.
It's just clarification more than anything else. You've got a milking platform. Where do you winter?
We are, everything's there, all adjacent, all our young stock. So it's 600 hectares in total.
Yep. So part of that land that is wintering, part of his milking platform?
Yes, yep. So this is looking north from part of the platform, and if you are looking up through here, out through across here, is where some of our wintering and young stock are run, and then back through here is where we run young stock and do some of our wintering as well. We run lambs, fattened lambs, during the summer and winter as well, and we run them on some of the likes of this land up here where slopes are quite hot, quite steep, and these areas the cattle or the heifers will summer on, and then yeah, it's too great a risk to soil disturbance through the late autumn winter, so we use lambs through that area. We lease this 40 hectares also at Pahi that we use for heifer grazing as well, and we don't winter any stock up there, it's quite exposed. So there's 3 months of the year in the winter time that there's no stock on that block as well.
So given that, where do you or do you see Appendix N as a place that you can actually record the specific information that relates to your property and the way you've actually managed your understanding of the environmental issues that you face on your property? Is that an appropriate place to put it, or do you have somewhere else that you would record that?
Well, I think to capture those that aren't perhaps as engaged, you do need some regulatory tool or some description. I don't too have too much of an issue with using Appendix N in that respect. I suppose the greatest issue in the short term will be having the professional capability to actually do those plans, really. Yeah. So it has to be simple enough that people are able to engage and do it themselves to a great extent if they can. Yeah. Because we're not going to have the professional capability. And we see that, like I have a friend who is a zone committee chair on the Waimak in Canterbury, and they just have not got professional people on the ground to get across the line. So that is, I suppose, in respect of what you guys are aiming to do, it's something to keep in mind. We have to have something that's simple enough that people can engage in and be part of. They need to take ownership of it, but because we simply haven't got professional people on the ground to actually get it done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you look at the Section 42A report that came out after the submissions were written?
I've looked at set pieces of it.
One of the points you made in your initial submission was about Policy 14 and the need to recognise capital investment.
Yes.
And so the subsequent plan that's dated in May on that Policy 14 says the permanence and economic life of any capital investment. Does that cover your concern?
Well, to a degree, and in that space we've just we're going through a change of structure with our farming practice at present, so we've just done a valuation.
Yeah.
Already what's happening in the background as far as land and water is concerned, and I suppose the uncertainty that's out there has actually had an effect on capital values already. So that's a pretty critical thing to keep in mind. You know, the latest Dairy NZ stats, I think it was Dairy NZ stats that came out, I can't remember who actually published them, but it was something like 30% of dairy farmers across New Zealand are sitting at $40 per kilo milk solids to debt service, to service debt. Debt servicing, sorry. So, you know, the other part sitting in the back of that too, Europe, is that whilst the conversation's going on about no more cows, where does that leave capital values for alternate land use?
So the principal point you're making is that this plan could affect equity.
Yes.
Right, that's your principle.
That's the principle.
Okay, thank you for that.
Not could, I would say it potentially already has
had
an effect on equity.
Good morning. Your suitably designed effluent ponds, do you include inspection portals in there?
No, not at this point. So our consent is up in June this year. So we're re-consenting going forward. As part of that process, we've been planning for a number of years, so our calving pads all lined and contained. Underpass is exactly the same, contained. And we have to add, so we've done a drop test on our original clay lined pond, which has passed, but we need additional storage. So that will be under the new rules, yeah. So it'll be lined and we have those portals in place, yes, for inspection.
Thank you.
Oh, you have two questions, Ewan. One, which I've asked other people too, in relation to tile drain cleaning, water blasting.
Yep.
We know that this causes some discoloration.
Yep.
So what options are available for people to mitigate or reduce the release of dirty water into streams or drains? Yeah.
Well, I suppose it's defining what causes that dirty water, Morris, I suppose, at home. And I suppose that's a consequence of bedrock hill country that we farm in predominantly. Most of those tiles or overflow is draining springs up through swales, up through gullies.
Yeah.
And a lot of that would be at 6 to 8, sometimes up to 10 feet deep. Yeah. So there's no soil actually reaches those, but most of those springs that you're picking up are, well, not most of them, they all are extremely high in iron.
Yeah.
So it's actually an iron that's settling out of the water when it oxidises.
Yeah.
So how do we mitigate it? I suppose the only thing I could say is that it is for a very short duration, mm-hmm. And it isn't always very significant, to be fair. And it is a predominantly a naturally occurring result of what's in the water anyway.
Okay. Rule 25, which in your submission you say you oppose, how could that be altered then?
Well, I suppose
to make it so that it's effective and reduce the sediment loss, but also is practical.
So if your physiographics are used to identify risk and fragments, like we've got ten hectares that have been identified on the platform that are peat wetland. Then if it is truly peat wetland, then can that not be part of your farm environment plan? So that's identified.
Yeah.
And then you manage it under good management practice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry, I was really thinking about the cultivation on slopes.
Yep.
That rule, rather than the physiographics in some cases are important there, but you say, part of their farm is more than 20 degrees and we'd be unable to cultivate it. We need to get a consent to cultivate it under the current proposal. Yep. So what I'm saying is, how can that be adjusted to be more practical but still protect water quality?
Yeah. Well, once again, I think it comes back to it being identified in the farm environment plans,
mm.
and risk the risk and the risk identified.
Yeah.
And then the management of it under good management practice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Rather than having a cut off at a certain degree or anything like that.
Yeah, I think. Well, after having done the submission, we had a field day at home on slope,
mm.
and a wee bit surprised at just how steep 20 degrees is, to be fair.
Right.
So, yeah, it was steeper than I had thought it would be. So there's not a heck of a lot of area at home that falls within that, but what there is, very little of it would we be able to cultivate anyway.
Okay. All right, thanks very much.
Yeah.
Just one question from me, and your submission on Rule 54, you said no reason to change the status quo. Just can you remind me what the status quo is in your mind?
Oh, man, I just actually looked through that too. Rob, please. Could you remind me what Rule 54 is?
Please? Rule 54 is the abstraction and use of groundwater.
Oh, just in regards to volume takes.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
So whatever's in the existing plan, are you happy with that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And no further questions. Thanks very much for coming.